The markets the day after the surge downward. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Market players are very focused today on concerns that President Trump's senior economic advisor, Gary Cohn, might resign. Cohn was said to be deeply offended by the president's comments after the deadly Charlottesville protests. The White House says nothing has changed. Cohn is focusing on his responsibilities. But Cohn, a former Goldman Sachs president, is seen as the one figure in the administration who gives Wall Street the most comfort. Cohn has even talked about for what is arguably the single most powerful economic policy position in America, Federal Reserve Chair. On Fridays, we consult with Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York.
The president has only mentioned two names, the possibility that maybe Yellen will stick around, or the possibility that Gary Cohn could be named. Just sort of emblematic of Cohn's demeanor, he has said he doesn't want the job. Most people think he would take it anyway if it were offered him. You know, one of the reasons that's very important is that when the Fed is tightening and they change chairs mid-tightening cycle, you want someone coming into the job who is self-assured, because the alternative is someone who has to prove himself. And an example of that was young, untested Ben Bernanke, who proved himself by tightening further than the market expected, and ultimately it turned out significantly further than the economy needed back in 2006. We don't want to repeat that mistake. You know, the market would love a guy like Gary Cohn, or frankly, a woman like Janet Yellen getting the job.
Now, the Fed also had some comments about the state of the stock market that we should definitely pay some attention to.
They have for some time noted that there are notable asset valuation pressures. In the minutes on Wednesday, they raised that threat level from notable to elevated. And on top of that, yesterday, Janet Yellen announced the topic of her speech for next week's big Jackson Hole symposium will be financial risks. That is a warning. The Federal Reserve thinks equities are overvalued, and it looks like maybe they're thinking they need to do something about that.
Well, we'll watch for that. That big meeting starts on Tuesday. Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, thank you for the briefing.
Thank you, David.
This month, we're looking at globalization at what I think is a turning point. Today's take is from Pankaj Ghiamawat, a professor at NYU's Stern School of Business. I spoke with him from his home office. Morning, Professor.
Good morning to you, David.
For most of my adult life, borders were dissolving, goods and people were moving more freely across the globe. Now we have Brexit in Europe. We have moves under Donald Trump to harden U.S. borders. I think it's the right time to ask, is globalization done, do you think?
Well, that's certainly what a lot of people are saying, and I think I'll sound the contrary note here. The sentiments have moved around more than the actual numbers. Globalization so far in the last 12, 18 months has been going sideways. It hasn't nosedived nearly as sharply as public sentiment or the tone of media coverage actually has.
But clearly, something's different with Brexit. Clearly, under the Trump administration, with moves towards greater protectionism. It's a different chapter in globalization, if indeed globalization isn't going away.
We're unlikely to live in a world in which globalization goes to zero. Given that, it's sort of, you know, it's probably important for business people and others to make some contingency plans about what does happen if we get a hard Brexit, or what does happen if, you know, the NAFTA renegotiations, whenever they conclude, do lead to a significant raising of barriers. But I think it's very, very silly to either plan for a world of either total free trade or a trade-free world.
I think globalization gets too much of the blame for the stagnation that many middle-class people feel in the developed world.
Compare the Netherlands and the U.S. The Netherlands has trade exposure roughly six times the U.S. level. Given that, and given that the Dutch still managed to preserve a more reasonable income distribution, I look at what's going on in the U.S., where clearly there are some major distributional concerns, and point to the fact that if, you know, the U.S. really isn't one of the world's most trade-intensive countries, there's probably something to do with domestic policy and changes in technology that plays as large, if not a larger role, in the outcomes that we're observing.
Pankaj Ghimawat is a professor at IESE Business School as well as the NYU Business School. Professor, thank you for this.
Thank you very much, David.
This month, our sustainability desk is looking at globalization in a series called Trade-Off. You can consult marketplace.org for more, including a cool video about winners and losers under the system. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.